What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Kinda Funny Games Cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Hello, Tim.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little mad at Def Jam, just as a group right now.
You can't let Def Jam play with your feelings, because I've been going to video games.
Blessing at AOE Jr.
Was there a rumor Def Jam was going to put out a new video game today?
Oh, of course. Well,
they do this. They do this notoriously.
Really?
Yeah, like this is not the first time where they've teased a Def Jam thing, or like talked about the Def Jam game and then followed up with nothing. At this point, I'm like, I don't care anymore. I don't trust y'all.
We got the former informer Imran Khan. Now you got your nose to the streets when it comes to the
news
and all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about, Imran? What do you know about this Def Jam?
They've
situation.
Been teasing some Def Jam thing for like 3 years. I'm not sure that they're ever actually, like, as far as I know, no one at EA has ever said, yeah, we're making a new Def Jam. So I think it's just like, we'd really like to make a new Def Jam. Let's just keep teasing it until they do it.
But did you see this most recent tease? Because it's some bullshit where Def Jam Recordings tweets out a screenshot from what seems to be Def Jam Vendetta. And it says, the streets saying we need a new Def Jam game.
The streets are saying that. I think Imran had his nose on the street and he has smelled that. That's a vibe.
Exactly. But then they followed that up the next day with, once our Twitter hits 1 million, we have a special announcement for y'all with a game controller emoji. They then hit 1 million.
And nothing.
And yet we get nothing.
Take back your follow, Tim. Unfollow.
Yeah.
I didn't follow.
Vote with your wallet.
They had already hit 1 million. I don't know, man. This seems like bullshit to me.
Do you think there's a chance we ever get a new Def Jam? Because I don't.
I've already given it up. What would that even look like nowadays? Who's even on Def Jam besides Gene now?
Is J. Cole on Def Jam?
No.
I'm looking it up. Because I cannot tell you off the top.
I don't know. Man.
True story. I didn't know until right now that the fighters in Def Jam were Def Jam artists.
Yeah.
Wow. They weren't. You learn something new every day. You know,
you do learn something new every day, right?
Kanye West is Def Jam.
Kind of Funny Games Cast.
So I'm looking at the roster right now. We got 070 Shake, who is awesome.
Okay.
They make great music. Alessia Cara, who I know from the Logic 1-800 song, but I know she makes songs elsewhere. I'm not saying that's the only thing she does.
That's just your touchstone for her.
Yeah, that's my touchstone. Big Sean, who I think would be a great in a fighting game.
Sean White.
No, that's a different Sean. No, I'm talking about Big Sean. He made this song, I Don't Fuck With You. Great song.
Is Sean White the snowboarder?
You?
Last skateboarder.
Wait, what?
He's a snowboarder slash skateboarder.
Don't give him the satisfaction. Don't give him the satisfaction. You can tell his smug look. He was fucking excited to like teach us something.
No, I just remember because like he had a video game that was like heavily based on Wrigley's gum or something like that.
They're Sean White?
Yeah, that product placement was just fucking everywhere in that game.
In the Sean White
remember? That's where he started with skateboarding, and he transitioned over into snowboarding, and that's when he started winning the Olympic medals, being the Flying Tomato.
But if you remember, the first time
I ever heard of Sean White was when he was just a little boy, no bigger than a pumpkin, riding skateboards on some MTV thing, and he collided with his partner, and he got knocked out. And then his partner ran over there like a moron and picked him up and was like swinging around his dead body. Like, no, if somebody gets knocked down, let them, you know, just keep their neck steady, right, Kevin? You don't get up there and start swinging the body around.
Absolutely. You got to keep him down.
So this is the Kind of Funny Games Cast each and every week right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We get together to talk about video games and all the things that we love about them. You can get the show ad free by going to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like our Patreon producers, Muhammad, Julian, the gluten free gamer, Skin Tight Salmon, Jeffrey P. Long. Now you can't forget the P there. It's very important.
Jeffrey P. P. Long time is what I call him.
Giving him an extra P there. Okay. Sancho West and James Hastings, thank you all for making this show happen. For people that want to watch it later for free on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or on your favorite podcast service, just search for Kind of Funny Games Cast. We're going to be right there for you. I want to just get right into what we've been
playing.
Me
too. That's why, Kevin, I'm sending you right now this link to YouTube video where Sean White collides with this guy. I timestamped it for you, but if you want to start at the very beginning, it starts with Diamond Dallas Page introducing. Tim, I don't know what MTV show this is.
Tim, just to be clear, I don't have to show this.
You go for it. Why not?
I don't know.
You think Viacom CBS is going to come for us? You think they're going to come for us?
Kevin's prepping this very important thing, I want to point out, I didn't read off the names from Def Jam that are probably going to be most consequential to this fighting game. Logic is on Def Jam, who, like, come on, Logic's got to be in there.
Yeah. Kanye Logic West, from his collab with that woman.
Kanye West is on Def Jam, and, like, who doesn't want to beat up Kanye West? Justin Bieber's on Def Jam.
Interesting.
Like, these are names.
I don't know if this is okay, but I don't know what Def Jam is, and we've been talking about it for a while, so
it's a record label.
Popular record labels, yeah.
Oh,
all right, so here you go. Here, hit it. Fabulous. Just watch this. Little baby Shaun White. Watch it.
Oh,
and then it's gonna go to an interview, but stay with it. Stay with it, Kevin. Don't panic, Kevin. Don't hit anything.
He's okay, right?
No, Shaun White never lived again. But look, they pick his body right up. Let him be. He's knocked down. Leave him alone. He's down. Oh, wow. He's down.
Here's the problem, Greg. There's other skateboarders around. Uh-huh. And you know how skateboarding is. It's like a rocket.
They're all high.
Once you're on, you know, at any point, you just kill the person next to you.
I watched that movie, 90s, mid-90s, and let me tell you, I know what all these kids are doing. They take a fucking drag off their doobie, then they drop in and they harsh the gnar and they hit each other. They don't know anything about medical procedures. They leave the fucking kid down. Let a medical – you got EMTs there at the X Games. Get over there. I just hit my teeth together.
Let me ask you guys this. Since
I haven't even had a Busan yet.
AKI is not really making wrestling games anymore. So that's a potential problem for a new Def Jam wrestling game. What if they just go full-ass anime fighter, Arxis makes a new Def Jam game? Oh. Would that be better or worse?
Better. I mean,
way better.
So, I mean, here's the deal. When you look at the Def Jam games, off the top of my head, there have been three. There was Def Jam Vendetta, which was the wrestling game. That was all right. Fun, but all right. Then there was Def Jam Fight for New York. Def Jam Takeover Fight for New York, I think it was called. That was more of a fighter. That was more of like a 3D... fighter brawler game, correct?
Yes, because Vendetta actually took place in a wrestling
ring.
Yeah, whereas Fight for New York took place in the streets, the way it
should
be.
In the fucking streets, and it was awesome. That game was fucking incredible, and I want a remake of that with modern rappers. That would be amazing. Then there was Def Jam Icon, and that game was absolute trash. I want nothing to do with it. Pretend it doesn't exist, and let's move on. That was a PS3 360 game.
Weirdly enough, I don't know how this is. I guess this is the topic of conversation because Def Jam was Sweden. But literally right before this, I was listening to Giant Bombcast, and Jeff Gerstmann was going to the mat defending Def Jam Icon, saying that it was actually a pretty decent game. I never played it, so I can't judge.
It was very, very, very bad.
Was Def Jam Rap Star good?
Def Jam Rap Star was fantastic for one reason to me personally, which was my very first E3 was when they were promoting that game. And I happened to be walking by the booth right when Method Man and Redman went on stage to perform. And when I say stage, I mean platform that was about 12 inches off the ground. And I was this far from both of them. And no one at E3 gave a fuck. And me and Alfredo are like, are you fucking kidding me? It's Method and Red right here in front of us. And none of these jabronis even give a shit. You know what I'm talking about, Greg? I see that look on your face.
I'm nodding. I was one of the jabronis probably. Like, oh man, cool. The How High guys are here.
Yeah. What an American classic.
How can you forget to mention that the Takeover is the PSP version? And they have a normal version.
Fake
GameCube,
fan.
PlayStation 2, Xbox.
Fake
but PSP,
fan.
Amazing. You know what I mean? Fuck, I miss it.
What the hell just happened? Did you guys just have a weird audio crossfade issue where like everything just canceled each other out? Greg and Kevin.
I heard was Greg saying fake fan and Kevin saying something in the background. I heard none of it.
Yeah, they hit a frequency that kind of just went. Anyways, I was going to have a beautiful segue from Greg's skateboarding video into my impressions of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
Oh my God.
Barrett and I got our hands on the demo. We did a first impressions. You can check that out on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or podcast feed. Search for first impressions. I just want to say, I don't want to talk too long about it. It's utterly fantastic. Everything they're doing with this game is more than I could have asked for. It feels right. It seems like a beautiful make good for the decade plus of horrible Tony Hawk games. The only criticism I have is they added sound effects where the characters have way too many voices. It's a lot of that, Greg. It's a lot of whoa, ha,
oh yeah, woohoo! This reminds, like, this reminds me of the time I ran into Sean White.
and don't quite go on that long. There's not, they're more efforts as opposed to words.
Yeah.
But man, it's besides that, and I hope you can turn that off because it's gonna get real annoying.
It's like the Mario Game Boy Advance games where they took all the 2D games, just put every sound effect possible in there.
Exactly. Okay. Like, why would you give Yoshi that voice? It just doesn't make sense. He doesn't need it, especially from the tinny ass GBA speakers where you're just like, can you please stop this hell? But no, besides that, all the quality of life stuff, it's just fantastic. We already knew that the games were going to adapt the gameplay mechanics from the later Tony Hawk games, like 3 and 4. But they went all out with it, where there's the trick modifiers, there's the acid drops, there's all the flatland special tricks, and you get to do all of that in the demo. Like, the demo's pretty bare bones, but when you start digging through the menus, you can start to find a lot of hidden secrets and fun things. You can actually change it back to a more classic mode where it plays exactly like Tony Hawk 1 or Tony Hawk 2. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but it's there for you if you want the more pure experience of the OGs. But there's little things, like, obviously we know that music's so important to these games, and they have the soundtrack that is the original from 1 and 2 plus 37 new songs. They're all mixed together. You can go into a playlist and choose what songs you like and what songs you don't. You just turn songs off, which is a nice feature. But on top of that, the songs never stop playing, so it's not like you do a 2-minute run and the song ends when you're done and you load up a next one, a new song plays. The songs play through the menu, like, just endlessly, which is really cool and seamless. And you can hit R3 at any time to skip to the next track.
Hmm.
So it's like, it's just little things that I'm like, man, these motherfuckers, they thought about like what people are going to care about. And they just have really, really done a good job with it. I can't wait to play more. Imran, have you got to play it at all?
No, I was, because I figured it's coming out in a couple of weeks anyway. I was probably just going to wait. But now I kind of really want to try the warehouse demo because that all sounds super cool. Like, it sounds like a game by people who are big Tony Hawk fans who have just been like kind of watching in the background, like, why the fuck are these motherfuckers messing all this up? Like, this would be so easy. They actually made the game they want to make.
Absolutely. And so far they're nailing it. What I love so much is it's a 2-minute demo that doesn't even have goals in it. And your stats are all the way down. So it's like, you can't really do too much. But already me and Barrett have been texting each other back and forth, like, outdoing each other's combos and runs and in single session, and remind me a lot less of when Mario Odyssey came out and you and Barrett would go back and forth with the Koopa races and stuff. And it's just like, I love that type of arcade gameplay, and I love it when it turns into a competition with your friends. But I also love when it's like you kind of start creating your own goals where I'm like, all right, I have these three specials. I want to make sure that I hit a 900, a McTwist, and my special 5-0 grind all in one combo. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, after failing and failing and failing, like, you get it. You're just like, hell yeah, baby. And
I'm so happy at that. I'm so happy with the return of this, because I've also gotten to get my hand on the warehouse demo. And it's been so interesting playing this back to back with Skater XL, where Skater XL, I've complained for weeks about it being just so empty as far
I've complained for
going.
Weeks about this game. I don't stop playing.
And I don't and that's the thing, is I don't stop playing the game. Like, I am like fully addicted to Skater XL. And the way I've described it on shows now is that, like, I am at the point where the streets are my content. Like, I'm going on the streets and I am essentially approaching this game as if I'm skateboarding in real life, where I'm like, all right, well, there's not really a point system. There aren't really like goals or challenges or like, you know, specific things that are set out for me to do, but I'm going to go out here, I'm going to do combos, and I'm going to essentially skate for myself. And playing that warehouse demo, what was that?
You're a soul skater.
Soul, is that what they call it? A soul skater?
Mm-hmm.
Damn. People, that's like
it's from like one game, the Suds and Puds or whatever.
The Suds and Puds. It's Brink, Suds motherfuckers. And Brink.
And what team were they?
Team Pup and Suds.
So fucking close. So that Imran, I get that point, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
That is a soul close skater enough. Is like the same kind of corny shit that where I remember watching Step Up 3D, and they had people that were called Born from a Boombox, BFAB, which was like the corniest shit ever, of course, because it's a dance movie and they needed like some kind of weird term to describe people who dance.
Quick, Blessing, when you were breakdancing, what was your troupe called? What did you call each other?
I was part of multiple dance teams.
Give me two of them.
There was one in college that I started that was called Ill Pandemic. That was essentially, I took that name from a Childish Gambino song where he rapped like Ill Pandemic, blah, blah, blah. So that was one.
I'm glad to see you back in your youth. You liked making fun of pandemics. Glad that blew up in your face. Take a serious subject. Like
I could not have predicted in 2012 or whatever where we'd be today. Maybe I would have second thought that. That was one, and then there was another one called Footwork Technicians because it was like a breakdancing thing.
That's good.
Yeah, we're really good at footwork, and so yeah, we were footwork technicians. There's another one called Sudden Impact. I think that might have been it for the dance games. Yeah, yeah. But as far as skateboarding games, I think I mentioned on this show a few weeks ago that like at a certain point, one's got to reign supreme, right? In this return of all these different skating games between Skater XL and Session and Tony Hawk and Skate 4. And I'm at the point where I'm on the opposite side of it now, where I'm like, the more the merrier. Like after having all my fun with Skater XL, after jumping into the warehouse demo and being like, oh yeah, even without objectives, like I'm still having a blast. There's something about the pure act of skating in a video game that is just fun regardless. And I don't know what is unique about skating as opposed to every other activity in video games that by itself, it can just be fun, but it works. I'm all about it.
I can't stop thinking about you saying the streets are my content. And I feel like that would be a great like life slogan.
There's a video.
And Imran knows all about them streets and how they smell. You know, I will say the last thing I'll say about Tony Hawk is it's so weird to have a physical reaction to a game that I haven't had in 15 years, probably, where my thumbs hurt. Like the skin is just burned off from the like hour that I've played this game already. I'm just like, oh man, I got a lot of pain coming for me in the next month or two, but bring it on, baby. Bring it on.
Real quick, speaking of pain.
Yeah.
So you're talking about how, you know, like now the more the merrier kind of thing. Is this going to be one of those situations where Skate 4 or whatever they're going to call it is going to show up in 2-3 years and it's going to be like at 4 a.m. and the party's over and everybody's passed out or gone home or puking outside? Like, is it still going to continue that much, you think? Where like, is there such an appetite for skating games that that'll still be a thing?
I think yes, because I think the thing about it is Skater XL isn't doing it. Like Skater XL is fun and Skater XL is kind of getting the job done for what it wants to be and what it needs to be, but I think there's still more of a craving for something that is more polished and something that is more content filled and something that will have more features and more of the nuts and bolts out of what you want out of a skate game. I think Skater XL for now, like, because Skate 4 is probably not going to be here for another like 3 or 4 years. For now, Skater XL can hold it down, and Session, when that comes out, will probably hold it down for the time being. But when Skate 4 comes out, I think that'll then probably make Skater XL and Session obsolete, unless those games find ways to really enhance the experience past what a skate can do.
I think the appetite for the $60 skate game is probably long dead. So like the 40 and below, probably there. So depending on how EA prices that thing and what the scope of that development is, it should still be fine in a couple
of years.
Maybe
it'll be $70. Maybe it'll be $70 in a row.
Oh, we'll
see.
Speaking of games that are way, way too expensive, it's finally time, guys. I've been playing Fast and Furious Crossroads. I know everybody has been waiting. Where's Tim's opinion on this? And I was like, we could do a first impressions. Like, no. I need to save this for the Kind of Funny Games cast. Guys, I'm about halfway through this game. I've heard that the campaign is about 5 hours. So I've played 2.5 hours. It legitimately feels like I've been playing this game for 20 hours. It is, for a game called Fast and Furious, it might be the slowest, like least thrilling game I have ever played in my life. Like, it is so snail paced. Even when you're going fast and there's crazy stuff happening, I'm just like, oh my God. Now, Bless, I'm gonna throw something at you real quick that you might be able to relate to. Imran, there's a chance you do too. Greg Miller, not a chance, and fuck, you know what I'm talking about here. A game called 007 Nightfire.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Right? Right? Mm-hmm.
The driving one,
do you remember the motorcycle missions?
I remember
where you're
them being
on the highway and you're just kind of like bobbing and weaving through traffic that's coming at you. I remember that being one of the most exciting things I've ever done in a video game.
Maybe I'm thinking the wrong thing then, but I remember Bond motorcycle missions.
It's just PS2 era video game goodness where it's just like, fuck it, just go fast. You're on a motorcycle. If you crash, you die. You're just going through, and it feels good. It was that sense. It was back when Need for Speed Underground had first invented that whole blur effect when you're driving and just makes you feel like you're going fast. Fast and Furious Crossroads doesn't have any of that. No. Mm-hmm. You're going slow.
It doesn't have the burnout effect.
Oh, no. Not at all. You're just kind of going through this shit, and it looks like 007 Nightfire on the PS2. But it just doesn't give me that thrill. that I
see,
got.
See, as you were describing it, the thing that came to mind for me was Spy Hunter on the PS2, ooh, which I feel like has kind of a similar feeling of, all right, yeah, this is kind of a, it's a, I mean, no pun intended, it is a fast and furious game, right? Like, you're driving a car and you're causing chaos, but it doesn't, that game doesn't necessarily have a feeling of speed. And the more I look at Fast and Furious Crossroads, the more I'm like, oh man, this kind of reminds me of Spy Hunter, except I like Spy Hunter. I don't know if I'm going to like Fast and Furious Crossroads when I play it.
So that's the thing, Wes, you nailed it. It's funny you brought up Spy Hunter. It exactly, this is a sequel to Spy Hunter. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much for this. God. I mean, even just looking at it now, having just played Fast and Furious Crossroads, I'm mad at how much this is more James fun Bond. This looks like. Yeah.
Yeah, this I thought this was Fast and Furious for a second. Yes.
Yeah,
you know, this
I
is
was
legit
like, oh man, this game looks better than I thought.
But you see the sense of speed you're getting here? Like, this just isn't in the game. And I'm like, how do you manage to fuck up literally the first word in the title of this thing? And the Spy Hunter comparison is very apt, where it often is less about racing and more about weird gadgets or hacking vans in front of you, or you know, following different police cars and seeing where they end up going and all this stuff. None of it fun. The one thing that I will say that makes this game absolutely worth it is the bonkers ass Fast and Furious story. Is Vin Diesel there? Yeah, dude. Yeah, he is. Michelle Rodriguez? Bet your damn ass. Tyrese? Mm-hmm. Any of the other actors? No. No, they didn't make the cut. But we do get them. And then we also get two new characters. The main new character, played by the woman from Walking Dead and Star Trek Discovery, Greg.
Oh.
Oh. Well, Michael Burnham. She's Michael Burnham in the thing. Yeah. Sonequa?
Sonequa something. Baron something, I think.
I'm on it.
Anyways, she's awesome. She's fantastic. And there's so many stupid Fast and Furious references. I was tweeting a couple of these as I was playing. But like, you literally, within the first 10 minutes of the game, you introduced to her car.
Sonequa Martin Green.
There we go. Martin Green, not Baron. And it's a 69 blue Camaro. Nice. And they reference that, like, oh, they fished it out of a lake in Florida. And I'm like, oh my God, they're legit referring to the car that Paul Walker and Tyrese drove into the lake at the end of Too Fast, Too Furious.
That's awesome.
It's like they don't drive it home enough for people that like don't have a stupid knowledge of the Fast and Furious movies like me. So I'm looking at this and I'm like, somebody really cared making this. Like, someone cared so much that Suki is name dropped multiple times. The pink car driver.
The person who cares about this has a name, and it's Vin Diesel. All right, he's invented a cinematic universe here, and I'm sure this was one of his things. Like, listen, you all know the cinematic universe. We need to make sure everything is connected. Everything is connected.
Can you
the imagine? Man's name is Andy Tudor, and he is the director of this game. And I've went down a rabbit hole of reading every interview that he has done about it, and he cares. I didn't know someone cared about Fast and Furious more than me. He does. He cares a lot,
Tim,
and I appreciate it.
How exciting it was for. Wait, Andy Tudor, you said?
Mm-hmm.
To go up to Vin Diesel and say, in the car? Yeah, it's the one from Fast 2.
Vin wouldn't have done this one.
No, I'm sure Vin was like, I wasn't in that one. I wasn't in that one.
No, he knows it at this point.
Yeah, anyways, the game is fucking ridiculous, and it's just, it doesn't feel good to control, it doesn't feel fast, it doesn't feel thrilling, and at the end of the day, I don't want to keep playing, but I have to get to the end, Craig. I have to.
So in the Vin Diesel video game cinematic universe of Riddick, Wheelman, this, mm-hmm. Where does it sit?
Oh my God, dead last by a long shot. This is a $60 game, and there's a $30 season pass, which makes this a $90 experience. These motherfuckers are crazy. Crazy.
More movies content or
I'm
what?
Shocked they got Sonequa, what's his name, Martin Green?
Martin Green.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Green in this game, and it doesn't have much care put into the actual game.
When Vin Diesel calls, you answer.
What are you talking about? It makes perfect sense. They spent all their money on getting her in this thing and getting a story.
Yeah, but like you get, like, because I understand Vin Diesel and Michelle Rodriguez because they're in Fast and Furious. But you're gonna put in the effort to add a new character who is Sonequa Martin Green from Walking Dead and Star Trek Discovery, and not put more effort into the, like.
Okay, guess who's gonna pop up in the next Fast and the Furious movie now? Sonequa Martin.
We'll see.
And people are going to be like, why is she here? I'm like, oh, you didn't play Fast and Furious. What is it? Crossroads? You didn't play that?
Yeah.
I tell you. You
and she's, again, she's awesome. Her character's awesome. Like, her acting's really great. Some of the, like, the cutscenes and stuff, they're fun. Like, a lot of them are real dumb and the dialogue's real bad. But, like, she's kind of fun. Her counterpart, Asia Kate Dillon, they're horrible. They might be the absolute worst modern voice actor I've come across. And like, I recommend you all look up YouTube videos of Fast and Furious Crossroads just to see how stilted their dialogue can be. And I just can't believe it. I can't believe that they'd get Sasha and then put her next to this person that, man, like, I don't know. I'm just so scared that in 2020 a game like this can make. What's up?
Who's the person I'm trying to Google to see, I think?
Asia Kate Dillon.
They delayed this game like 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was supposed to come out in May. So, like, 3 months. Movie. So, probably they only delayed it because of the movie and not because they were actually working on it.
Yep. Mm. I don't think they've touched this, if I'm being honest, in 2 years.
It was the closer for Game Awards. It was
that's the thing. Like, there are quite a few things about this that blows my mind. One is, yes, it was the closer at Game Awards. Which, wow.
When you have the option to have Vin Diesel come, you let him pimp whatever he wants.
But then also the fact that we've gotten a movie license game of this ilk in 2020, I think that in itself is kind of neat, honestly. Like,
and that's the thing, Bless. I'm going to give it to it. Like, it is kind of neat. It totally is one of those shitty movie license games, and playing through it, I'm just like, wow, this is such a nostalgia trip for something that I don't want back, but like, it's a very familiar feeling playing this game. But anyways, the fact that it's $60 is just egregious.
I will say, if you want an alternative to this, Spy Hunter 3 on the PS2 starred Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is one of the stars of Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. And so you can play that and pretend that you're The Rock's character from Fast and Furious.
Play Spy Hunter, play Wheelman, play them together, and you have a better game than this.
Exactly. Exactly. So this game is horrendously priced, but it's not the only game horrendously priced. Imran, what you been playing?
So after I finished Last of Us, I was like, okay, video games are kind of a bummer. I'm going to play something like very small and like lighthearted. So I started playing, Tim, a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned you finally finished Peggle. I was like, I wonder if there's a Peggle on the iPhone. There is. It's Peggle Blast. It came out like 3 years ago. Download that. Half that game is fucking amazing. The other half is just pure unadulterated dog shit, and I'm so happy
that there's another human being that understands and is playing through Peggle Blast. So what I was saying a couple weeks ago is that I've been going back and trying to 3-star all of it, and I'm still not there because it is impossibly difficult in so many places. I'm down to the last like 20 missions or so. But Peggle Blast is one of the greatest video games to ever exist. It is fantastic. It is Peggle at its best. Playing these games vertically is how these things should be played.
Yeah.
Having the ball bounce down, like, there's so much more real estate to have, so much more fun to be had, so many more microtransactions to be had to ruin the experience. To know there's just no ends to how horrible it can be, and you're now experiencing it for the first time.
I am stuck on it appears to be level 69, which is a bunch of frozen red peggles in a random formation just coming across the screen in like music note form. And I have been playing this level for 2 weeks. I have not been able to beat it. And I assume it's because they want you to pay for like the flaming peggles or all that jazz, because it does not seem possible without that. I know people on Twitter have said it's possible. They've said like, oh, you don't have to pay for anything. It just takes a lot of tries and time. I can't see it. I can't actually see how that's done without it.
So I beat the game without using any of those bottom left power up moves a single time. Mm-hmm. But I did. I told you need to cheese this shit. And you're just cheesing the microtransactions because you're only allowed to play a couple times. But if you retry, if you reset your game before you lose, you get unlimited tries. It's annoying as shit, but it works.
So I discovered that based on the fact that it was faster for me to close it and restart than it was to watch the ad. Mm-hmm. And this is my first like real exposure to mobile game ads. Mobile game ads are fucking stupid. They're just like, I'm 99% sure none of these games actually exist. I don't know what's going to happen if I click this ad, but it's not going to take me to a game. It's going to take me to some Russian site that like steals my credit card number.
A virus.
Yep. Yeah. Because it's all like, which of these two women is actually the shoplifter here? It's like, what am I supposed to, what would this game actually be? Is it, then almost all of them are so, like, they will say, wait 4 seconds to press the X so you can, like, move past the ad. But there's another, like, 4 seconds on another screen to move past the next part. So this is, one, I can understand doing ads or doing microtransactions, doing both. Seems like it's just too far. And if it were not for the ads, if it were just like stamina and microtransactions, I'd probably toss a couple of bucks there. I'd probably be like, okay, sure. I like this game enough. I will give it a couple of dollars as like a tip jar and use it to spend past this fucking terrible level I'm stuck on. But because it's both, there's like a part of my brain that's going like, that's what they want you to do. They want you to pay that money.
I won't give it. I'm Imran.
I got to be principled about this. So the most likely situation is I'm just going to give up at some point, but I want to actually just beat this one level because I'm, it seems so incredibly, keep in mind, I'm not like, I'm someone who does not give up very easily on games for difficulty reasons. I will go through the hardest games and like the difficulty I'm on and not turn it down to easy, even if it does like annoy me. But this one, I'm just like, I'm so close to just throwing my phone across the screen or across the room because it's not difficult for any good reason. Yeah, that's the one. Overture. That level sucks ass.
It's 3 stars, baby.
3 stars. Damn. How, Tim? How? Damn. I don't understand.
Let's go. Oh, man. What a game. I wish my problem with it is not only is it egregious as fuck, but they took Peggle 1 off. Like, Peggle Classic and Peggle Knights is just gone from the App Store. Like, you can't get those games anymore. The only
Peggle Knights is what I was looking for.
Is Blast, and it's so lame.
Just play Round Guard. Just play Round Guard with that game.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Here we go.
I really like Round Guard. It's just if it's not in portrait mode, and that becomes more annoying.
It's a huge issue, man.
That's fair.
Like, if they just put that game in portrait mode, like through a patch or whatever, update or whatever, sure. I would love that game. It's a fantastic Peggle-like, but having to hold my phone with two hands means it's I have to like focus more on what I'm doing. It's not a thing I can play on like while I'm laying on my side in bed or things like that, which seem like nitpicks. But if I'm already playing a phone game, I want to play it that like one way.
Remember, I think it's $25, maybe $20, you can buy it on PlayStation 4. So there you go, Imran. Just play it on a big screen TV. You know what I mean?
That seems like the exact same thing as holding a phone with both hands. But
it's very big now. It's very big.
It's very, very big.
That's true.
Bless. There's a game called 3 out of 10 that you wanted to talk about. What is this?
Yeah, so I got hit up to preview this game. It's an indie game from the developers of Mother Gunship and what is the other game? Tower of Guns. Mm. And that would make you think, oh man, okay, they're putting out a new first-person shooter that's going to be a roguelike kind of thing. And they're putting out a game that is the exact opposite. So 3 out of 10 is basically, it's hard to describe it in genre because it's kind of genreless, but it is closest to an adventure game where you're playing in episode one. It is an episodic game, so it's 5 episodes. Right now it's exclusive to the Epic Game Store, and it's free, which is pretty awesome. But you're playing as a character named Midge who comes to this studio called Shovelwork Studios. And basically the whole conceit of the game is Shovelwork Studios is the worst game development studio of all time. They've never released a game that's gotten above a 3 out of 10. And you're basically going through what is essentially a sitcom. Like, they describe it as a video game sitcom. It is more analogous to something that's like Adult Swimish or like Archer or something like that. So you're just going through the motions and you're trying to figure out, like, as Midge, you're coming into the studio and you're going, okay, you guys never put out a game that's above a 3 out of 10. What's going on here? And you kind of go and the story kind of progresses from there and things kind of get ridiculous. I previewed this game a couple weeks ago and just played episode one, and I'm actually like really into it. I was not expecting to be as into it as I am. The writing's really funny. Again, for the folks who made Mother Gunship and Tower of Guns, I was surprised that they're able to pull off a game that has such good humor and character. The reason why I say it feels like it's genreless is because it kind of bounces back and forth from the overworld stuff, which is more adventure game style, into different mini games, and the mini games actually make up a good portion of the actual whole game. And so the game starts off and you're playing the game that they're developing, that Shovelworks Studios is developing, which is basically an endless runner. And the joke there is oh yeah, we're making an endless runner, but the twist is that it has an ending. Like that's like the twist to the game that they're developing. And you start off the game, you're playing it, and the whole thing is that the game sucks. And so you get to the end and you're like, okay, cool. And then you go into the overworld and you get into the story, and then you jump back into different mini games based on the different activities that are going on in the studio. Once again, it's 5 episodes. All the episodes are free and they're coming out weekly. And I want to say the second episode comes out tomorrow. And I really enjoyed episode 1. I actually can't wait to play the rest of them.
This sounds fascinating. Like, listening to you describe all that, like, everywhere I thought your senses were going to go just went a totally different turn.
Yeah.
That sounds really interesting.
It's really unique. And, like, there are games that do quirky stuff all the time. This one somehow managed to grab me and get me interested. Like, I feel like not enough games really go for comedy in a way that is very much like a, hey, this is a comedy game. Like, we have our Jazz Punks in our Undertales, in our Borderlands and stuff like that. But I really appreciate how this game is going about it as being like a sitcom-ish sort of experience more than anything else.
That's really like, so how does that play out as a game though? A sitcom?
It's more adventure than gamey. Like the gamiest aspect of this game outside of just like the mini games that exist within the game are the fact that with the more stuff you do in the game, the more stuff you discover during the overworld sections, and the better you do in the mini games, you get star ratings, and you can compare those star ratings to your friends. And so like you can end the episode with let's say 23 stars because you got 4 stars in one mini game, 3 stars in another mini game, 5 stars just from talking to different characters in the overworld and all this different stuff. And yeah, towards the end of the episode, you have 23 stars you can compare to your friends. Like that is like the most gamiest aspect of this game overall. But really, what it comes down to is it is basically a very linear adventure game in terms of like you're talking to different characters, trying to figure out what's going on, and moving on to the next story beat in the overworld. But then you're jumping into these different mini games, which are, all right, here's an endless runner. All right, here is this match 3 game. All right, here is this quick beat 'em up game. Like it is them throwing a bunch of different shit at you. Throwing a lot of shit at you within one episode to kind of move you on to the next story beat. And again, like the game is pretty lighthearted in the way that it does it. Like it's not like an innovative sort of thing, but I think it comes together in a pretty fun way.
Cool. Yeah. The other two games you want to talk about were VR games, Fight Crab and Fit XR.
So Fight Crab isn't a VR game. Fight Crab is a PC game that I jumped into. This is one that was at, I want to say, New Game Plus Expo, and that's when it really piqued my interest. It's essentially a fighting game where you fight as crabs, and so it takes place behind the back, right? You are playing as a crab, and the left analog stick controls your left arm, right analog stick controls your right arm, and you're basically swinging and you're trying to take out the other crab. It's quirky, and it has a fun thing going for it as far as its style and as far as how ridiculous it is. In practice, I didn't really have that much fun with it. In practice, I did a few matches and I was like, all right, this, it feels like you're playing an Octodad fighting game. It feels like you're playing a fighting game that is fighting against you more so than you are having control over the situation that's going on. And at a certain point, like the swings you're making with your crab arms feel more janky than anything. It doesn't feel as accurate as you want it to be. That said, like it's a fun idea, and it gets ridiculous in terms of you can have different weapons and different shit goes on with it. Like the whole game is kind of tongue-in-cheek in its presentation, but it's not necessarily that fun.
Let me throw this out there though, Bless. Apparently the Switch version, you can just use the Joy-Cons as like swinging things.
As like gyro motion?
Yeah.
That might change everything. that sounds awesome. I might actually try out the Switch version just for that. I don't know if that's going to fix the game for me, but that sounds like a more fun way to control as opposed to using the thumbsticks, because I did not enjoy that too much. But yeah, Fit XR is the VR game I played. And I feel like for a while, I've been on this search for a good workout game in VR, because Beat Saber has pretty much been that for me. But like Beat Saber isn't necessarily trying to be a workout game. Like they have one song in there that is called, I think it's called like Beat Fit or something like that, where it is a song that is entirely tailored to get you moving and get the blood pumping. But aside from that, like, Beat Saber isn't necessarily a workout game. And I've been trying to find a game that is really, that is going to be well-rounded in terms of the kind of workout I'm going to get from it. And so I tried, Greg, what's the one that you talked about? Supernatural. Yeah, I tried Supernatural, and I thought it was fine. I feel like I don't have enough space in my room to do it, is the main thing, because that game requires you to move a lot.
In 360. If you go to Alana Pierce's Twitter, you can see her break one of her controllers in her kitchen the other night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of the fear I have as I'm playing the game, is like you're doing like a lot of spinning around and a lot of turning. And at any point, I feel like I have to peek under my VR headset to make sure I'm not about to hit something else. And I don't like that type of distraction and fear as I'm trying to be fully immersed in this workout experience. And so I kind of gave up on that. And also, that's like a monthly subscription sort of deal. And I was like, all right, cool. I'm good. I don't want to keep paying for it. I tried this thing called, I think it's called O-Shape. It's either O-Shape or On-Shape, which is basically I forget what show this is from, but there's like game shows where there's like a thing that's coming at you and you have to shape your body in a certain way in order to get through it. The Wall. Yes. It's basically that in VR form. That I thought was pretty fun, but I got bored of it pretty quickly. Fit XR is my latest venture into trying to find the perfect workout game.
Trying not to die during quarantine from inactivity.
Exactly. And basically, it's a boxing game. And I think it used to be called Box VR, and they recently changed the name to Fit XR for whatever reason. And it has kind of a similar thing as Supernatural, where you jump into it, and there are these different kind of trainings you can jump into. You can do all these different types of sessions. I've only been doing very quick ones, so I haven't really gotten like a full workout experience from it yet. But from the little I've played, basically it's boxing. Basically, you have things that are coming at you in a similar vein as Beat Saber, where it is a yellow thing for right punch, a blue thing for left punch. There will be certain, I don't know what to call it, nodes, I guess, that are shaped for, okay, you need to hook this one. Okay, you need to hook left this one. All right, uppercut this one. All right, uppercut with the other arm this one. Right, like they're coming at you and they're asking you to do different types of boxing punches. They also have things that you need to duck over, and then things that you need to lunge to the side, to each side in order to dodge. I've been having a blast with that one, because it is little movement in terms of what you're doing, like side to side. Like, you don't need to turn at all. It is very straightforward, but at the same time, it is geared towards getting your blood pumping, and is geared towards getting you moving in a way that feel safe and in control, but still full range. Like, you still feel like you're getting that workout. And so for now, I'm enjoying it. It's called Fit XR, if anybody's interested in trying it out.
Greg, before we started the show, I asked you what games you've been playing.
Yeah.
And then during the show, you slacked me and said that you forgot one.
Yeah.
You wanted me to add. And that game was called, ironically, Before I Forget.
Right. Yeah. I tweeted this one, a thread about this, I think last week or whatever, where I had a gap and jumped into it. Before I Forget is a game about Alzheimer's and suffering from it. You play a woman who is suffering from Alzheimer's, and you are in your house and you don't exactly know what's going on. And so it's only about like 40 minutes long. It's a PC game. You can get it on Steam. You can get it on Itch. And it hit me so hard the other day playing it, because as I talked about in the Twitter thread, you know, in another life when I was still working at the newspaper and doing stuff, I did a lot of stuff in mid-Missouri about Alzheimer's and what it was and the people suffering from it and patients and their stories about it. And so what's always so horrifying about this disease is, of course, forgetting who you are and not being able to understand what's going on. And this game, I think, obviously, we'll never know what it's like to actually have this disease. Or I should say, we hopefully will never know what it's like to have this disease. But this game puts you into those shoes so well, in terms of like just the way it plays with you. Because the game is, you know, just existing. It's not about like, obviously, a high score. It's not about trying to actually get out of the house or do anything. You basically wake up and find a post-it note similar to Memento that you've left for yourself about a man named Dylan or whatever. And that sets you off of, oh, right, my husband. And you start going around the house trying to do things, but you get turned around, you get disoriented, the house changes. There's one very, like, I think, haunting segment where, you know, I've already gone into the closet to put something away, and I'm walking down that hallway and I realize I have to go to the bathroom. So I go to where the bathroom is and I open the door, but it's the closet. And then I turn around and try to go to where the bathroom is, because I've already seen the bathroom in the game, and open the door and it's the closet. And that keeps happening until you have an accident. And it's a similar thing of, you go through and you start getting bits and pieces of this life together you had with your husband and your family and your world, right? And who you were before this, who you are now. You're not sure in the timeline where exactly it is. They keep, you know, intersplicing and doing time slips where, like, you literally, you know, don't know what day it is. Like, you know, you're finding notes of, like, not to trust the food in the fridge, even though you just put the food in the fridge. Like, you know it's good, but do you know it's good? How much time is gone? Like, it was super powerful in terms of trying to tell a story on its own, for sure. But I think in general, just giving you a glimpse as to what it's like to have that disease. I know so many of us, you know, I tweeted about it. So many of the responses were people who have gone through that with family members, whether it be, you know, grandparents, uncles, moms, whatever. But to actually live it in a way was something not special. It makes it sound like it was a good thing, but it was powerful for me with so many, I think, personal emotions wrapped up in it, let alone just, I think, you know, you watch a movie like Still Alice or something like that, and you see that, and you see, like, Julianne Moore's character start to slip and not know how to do it, and see the ramifications of her family. I think even when I was reporting on it, so many of the stories I would tell were from the outside looking in, but to be in it the best way you can in terms of a, you know, fictional medium here, was just super interesting to see what that's like and how horrifying it is.
Wow. The other thing you want to talk about was the Genki converter doc.
Right, yeah, because outside of the stuff I've already talked about, you know, Talk to Death on PS I Love You or whatever, like Fall Guys, you know, we're playing Shadow right now for a Shadow of the Colossus for a review on PS I Love You next week. I fucked around and got re-addicted to Animal Crossing, where I went and did the IGN charity stream a couple weeks ago, showed Brian around my town, but I was very upfront of like, hey, I really haven't touched it since, like, you know, 2 months after launch, so I've been off for like 2 months on top of that. And I was like, the day I did the IGN stream was the day they announced the new Fireworks update and some of the summer stuff they were doing. But more importantly, they teased the fall content for next month, or, you know, in September they'll talk about it and showed the little pumpkin. And I was like, when fucking Halloween happens, when the leaves are changing color, when it's fall, when it's Halloween, when it's Thanksgiving, when it's Christmas, I'll be full blown back into this and doing shit. But even having said that, tooling around to get my island in shape for Brian to visit, I then started doing the, well, I'll just go in there and see what's in the shop today. Oh, I'll just go in there. And sure as shit, now I'm doing big time renovations on the island. I built a outside podcast studio right here. You can see I'm still waiting up the chairs, but you see I have all the things set up so we can do the show there. I got mic stands in there. I got chairs for the audience. I got studio lights. And as luck would have it, in the middle of that, do you know what the Genki doc is, Tim?
I do not.
It is this. And what this is, if you're an audio listener, I guess, think of something about the size of a pack of matches, maybe a fatter lighter. But that's the Nintendo Switch dock all in one. So, like, for as much as we travel, Tim, toss that in the bag and go. Because you pop it up and it's, you know, there's the charger part of it, right? You plug it in, and then on the other side, you have HDMI, you have USB 3.0, and you have USB-C. And so awesome. You buy the...
Is
you
this get the, safe?
Yes, exactly. No, yeah, of course. We all remember when the Nyko dock was out and was screwing everything up and eating people's things and bricked it. And granted, to their point, remember that Nyko went and actually refunded those and, you know, fixed your switches and yada, yada, yada. No, this one on their website has a laundry list of why this is different and how they understand what they're doing, and this will not brick your Switch, right? And so, cool. No, it's just a super small portable charger that does everything. And so, rather than have to drag the dock when we do go somewhere, right, you toss this in there with USB-C and then an HDMI cable. It comes with everything except the HDMI. The box itself has everything except an HDMI in it that you would need. It's also got different power plugs for it, so when we go abroad or whatever. But yeah, you plug it into the wall or the outlet, you put the HDMI into it to the TV, and then you put a USB, thank you Kevin for bringing this up over there, a USB-C into it, and then into the base of your Switch, and bam, you're up and running on it. So I was while I was screwing around with Animal Crossing and, you know, building and selling and doing all these different things, I was using this and having a great time. I think, you know, when we're back on the road, it'll be so great, because that is the big thing about it, where I bring my Switch with me all the time on the road or to go visit people, right? But I so rarely bring the dock because it's just such a chunker that I don't have it with me. I always have a USB-C to USB-C, and I often, you know, with the PlayStation, drag around an HDMI cable too. So it's like just those little things, and then this little guy. Yeah, it's pretty great.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
The question that I have,
sure,
is I wonder if this allows for the GameCube controller adapter.
Well, that's USB, right?
Yeah, it's USB, but it requires two. But Imran, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, here. It'll only support two controllers if you only have one thing plugged in. So you, to have all four, you need two plugs. So if you only fine with two players, then yes, you're fine.
Oh, see, I didn't know. I thought it was just vibration that you lost if you didn't have the two. So it's you only two controllers. Vibration too,
but I think it is just two controllers.
Okay. Well, that gets me somewhere. This looks awesome. You sold me, Greg.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, they sent it for review, obviously. $75. But also the things rated well enough. I'm reading the side here. USB Type-C holes good enough for MacBooks, iPad Pros, iPhones, Androids, accessories. Yeah, you know, it's got the audio for the USB for controllers. The Ethernet thing would work, USB drive. And then obviously output anything that takes HDMI. But yeah, that was my same thing of like, you know, when I remember when the Nyko stuff was happening and it was like, oh man, that sucks because we would love to have it, right? Just to have something that small, you know, my travel backpack, like have this right in there all the time and I didn't have to think about it and just have it ready to go for, yeah, when I get to hotel room or when I go visit Jen's parents, and I just want to take over the TV for a hot second.
Yeah, man. Super cool.
Yep.
Before we move on, let me tell you about some other super cool stuff, our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Honey. We all shop online, and we've all seen the promo code field taunt us at the checkout. You don't need to let it taunt you anymore. You can let it help you, like we've been doing for years. I know I've been using this. Kevin's been using this. Joey. Pretty much all of Kind of Funny, including Kind of Funny, the company. We've saved thousands of dollars using Honey, and it's so easy. I can't imagine not using Honey. You install it once. Takes a couple clicks, then it's just in your browser. Anytime you're internet shopping, it will just automatically apply the best coupon to save you as much money as possible. And it works for anything from small little Etsy sites all the way up to things like Best Buy. A lot of the Hue lights that I bought recently, I saved a ton of money just using Honey, which means I didn't need to do anything. It just did it for me. Saved me some money. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in just a few seconds. By getting it, you're doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/kinda. That's joinhoney.com/kinda. Next up, shout out to Upstart. During these economically turbulent times, everyone's looking for a way to feel more financially secure. If you're needlessly throwing money every month at high interest credit card debt, now's the time for you to check out Upstart, the revolutionary online lending platform that knows that you are more than just your credit score. Now's the time to find out how low your Upstart rate can be to help offpay high interest credit card debt. Unlike other lenders, Upstart can reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. You don't need a degree or diploma to apply, though. It's simple stuff. One of my best friends been going through some credit issues, been using Upstart. Totally consolidated everything for him, made it so much easier and simple for him. It makes it fast, simple to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept your rate and proceed with the application. You can free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt and get back to using your money your way with Upstart. See why Upstart has a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/kindoffunny to find out how low your Upstart rate can be. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/kindoffunny. Your loan amount will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Not all applicants will qualify for the full amount. That's upstart.com/kindoffunny for more info. And finally, I want to give a shout out to Sunsoil. These days, it seems like companies are putting CBD in everything. If you don't know where to start, there's a company in Vermont that's down to earth and doing things a little bit differently. G has been using some of this and she's been having a great time. It's really soothing. She's liking it. She likes the soothing factors. Sunsoil makes CBD oil that is USDA certified organic. They grow hemp on their farms in Vermont and they never use pesticides, herbicides, or GMOs. Sunsoil keeps it simple. In fact, most of their CBD products have just two simple ingredients, coconut oil and hemp. Can't get much more simpler than that. Sunsoil is surprisingly affordable because they farm their own hemp and stick to simple ingredients. They offer higher quality CBD at half the price of other brands. Sunsoil makes pure and simple CBD products at an unbeatable price. You can get 30% off your first order by going to sunsoil.com/kindoffunny. That's sunsoil.com/kindoffunny for 30% off your first order. Again, sunsoil.com/kindoffunny. Now let's do the topic of the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Stop.
What does the rest of the Switch's life look like? Imran and I were on Games Daily last week, and this kind of came up lightly, and I was like, this seems like a bigger conversation that I want my boys, Greg Miller and Blessing at AOEA Jr. involved in. So let's start here. When does the Switch's life end?
2024.
So
and what's four more years? So what does that mean to you, though, Bless?
That was just a random number, but I got that from 7 years because that's how long I associate with console life cycles. But like, who knows, right? Like, it's Nintendo. Nintendo tends to do things differently. And so, how long did the? I mean, the Wii U was not that great of a console, and so maybe it lasted shorter than it would have. But how long did the Wii U last?
2012. Like, that came out.
So I was like not even 5 years.
End of 2012 to beginning of 2017. So like more like 4.5. But yeah.
And how long was the Wii? The Wii came out in what, 2006?
2006 to 2012. So that was a longer one. GameCube was end of 2001 to end of 2006.
It's like 5-6 years is how long you probably expect from a Nintendo console.
Yeah, they hit the parachute button and like, no, get the fuck out of here. Like, we're not going to be able to do this for much longer. The rest of them have been like a fairly standard 5-6 years. Switch is more successful than most. So I assume that would... like. The Wii, I think, would have lasted longer if not for the iPhone and the casual like audience kind of leaving the Wii to go do that stuff. Mm-hmm. The Switch is a kind of a different beast. How long that will last is going to depend a lot on like how long, because Nintendo doesn't have a portable system to support anymore. So one of the reasons the Wii U failed is because they needed to support the 3DS, because that one needed bailing out quickly. The Switch isn't going to have that problem, so there's going to be no new portable system that needs bailing out. So all the software, theoretically, should just keep going to the Switch for the next however many years.
And with that said, right, I'm thinking then like 2023 maybe for a new Nintendo console. But that also, I think that also comes down to, like Emron's saying, right, the success of the Switch. But then also, what does a new Switch model look like? Like, what does that then do for the Switch, right? If they make a Switch XL or a Super Switch or whatever it may be called. Which I think is very likely given how Nintendo's treated the 3DS with the 2DS and the 3DS XL and all the different models of that.
I guess so. That to me is the bigger thing. Question two that I think directly determines question one, which would be, what does the next Switch look like? Is the next Switch? So we can all kind of agree that there's going to be some type of Switch Pro at some point. Mm-hmm. But is that the Switch 2? Or is that just a more incremental, like a 3DS XL type situation?
That's my question that I have to turn towards the Nintendo experts a bit more on this, right? Because I think I was, you know, at IGN more covering Nintendo consoles at home consoles versus handhelds. The success of the Switch, the way it's just dominated and been awesome and so beloved, I think it would fall more into that category that I always fuck up. If you pay attention to me on any show, when I'm like, oh, the Nintendo, that was a DS game. No, it was a 3DS. Oh, okay, it was a new 3DS. What's the new 3DS? Like, it feels like that's such a hazy spot of what those handhelds were. Is that what a Switch XL would become? That it's still playing Switch games, but there's some that are only good for it, or Switch Pro, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. So the real, like, the to get on the same page and get you kind of understanding how Nintendo has previously done this, when you look at the Game Boy to Game Boy Color, right, this was the first time we really saw it, where the Game Boy Color did have exclusive games, but not too many of them, and mainly it was just a different version of the Game Boy, but there were games that you could only play on the Color, right? But mainly there were still Game Boy games coming out that you could play on either Game Boy Pocket or Color, right?
Yeah.
Then when GBA didn't really have anything like that, GBA, just whether you had the GBA or the SP or Micro, they all played the same games. Mm-hmm. Then with the DS, that's when there was the DS, there was the Lite, the DSi. The DSi had, again, a handful of games that were exclusive to that, but looks for like all intents and
Hardware was more or less the same, just like a little different, but the only reason that games are exclusive is because they were downloadable games. That was it.
Exactly. And then when we got to the 3DS, there was the new 3DS, which had a couple exclusive games.
Had the nub, right?
And it had the buttons. Yeah, exactly. But that was really, there was what, like
Xenoblade and Fire Emblem Warriors were, I think, the only two I can think of.
Yeah. So really, it was kind of like a bizarre choice, honestly, for them to have any exclusive games behind that. I don't know why they would have done that. So I don't see them doing that again.
Okay.
Imran, what do you think?
I think it depends a lot on, like, so when you were like talking about the differences between the versions, I think it's more likely to look like a PS4 Pro than it is to look like a new 3DS. Like, here it is, a thing that is just more powerful, and it'll get those ports that we want to get from like Unreal Engine 5 games down to UE4 to like they won't look nearly as good as PS5 or Xbox Series X versions, but they will look like they will be playable on the system. I think that is a logical place to go. I don't think I see them doing that in a way that makes those games exclusive, just because like it hasn't ever worked out for them. Like, we struggled to name what the games were on those exclusive versions for other consoles or for other handhelds. I don't think they're going to just try to run that again. They might just... Game architecture is so much more scalable these days that it is possible to make a game that runs on a bunch of different types of power levels, as like we're going to probably see in the Xbox next generation, or like we've been seeing in PC forever, that plays identically but doesn't look as good on each form. I can see a situation where, let's say, I mean, I don't think it's going to be part of this program or initiative or whatever, but let's say Breath of the Wild 2 looks better on Switch Pro, doesn't necessarily look as good. Looks like Breath of the Wild 1 has frame rate problems, all that, on regular Switch. That is where I think they probably would go, because it does allow them to keep up in that port conversation with the other two newer consoles.
So, okay, so if that's the case, then we expect we're getting a Pro. We expect it's going to be more similar to the 1X or the PlayStation 4 Pro, and it's just going to be the best place to play the versions of the games that you can also play on the other ones. When do we get that, and what does that mean for the Switch 2?
I would bet next year. I would bet, because they've been, Furukawa has made some noise that he thinks the Switch is not half over. He thinks that 2021, or like, I think he just referred to it like a nebulous future or whatever, but he thinks that this year is going to be like a big year for Switch and all that jazz. I would bet that they realize, especially with the way things are like slowing down now due to COVID and stuff like that, maybe that delays plans a little bit, but they can use this coming year, when it's going to be the slowest time possible for the newest consoles. It's also going to be like a big year in terms of, like, I think it's Zelda and Metroid's anniversary. They kind of have to delay Mario's anniversary a little bit. This would be the time for them
delay
to, like,
the anniversary.
Yeah,
like, what it's a fucking world.
It's the time to, like,
it's time to, like, really go in there and, like, be a big software showcase for the Switch, and then also not call it a successor system, but just release a thing like, hey, if you want more high-end games, this is the way you can do it.
Bless you.
Bless
you. So, thank you. So, okay, I'm with you on that. I do think that we would have even seen it this year had things not went the way that they did. So, with where they're at, I do expect that we'll see Switch Pro, whatever it is, next year. So, that means Switch 2 in 2024.
I would say 2024.
The more I think about it, the more I'm like, okay, yeah, they might want to ride this wave. Because when you look at the Wii U, this will come back to how they brand it. Because I think with whatever the successor to the Switch is, as far as like the actual console cutoff, this is your new console, I would assume they'd want to keep the Switch branding, because the Switch branding is powerful and they found such success with it. But that kind of did backfire with them with the Wii U, where the Wii U is one of the most popular consoles to come out, and the Wii U comes out and nobody gets it because it's confusing. All right, is this a new console? What is this? Like,
here's the problem with the Wii U. The Wii U wasn't the Wii. And that's like, obviously there was a number of problems like leading momentum up into the Wii. Like, they just shut that console software down like a year or two before the Wii came out, or Wii U came out. So there was nothing like getting Nintendo fans excited for a new system. But the Wii was a system where you, grandma, your mom, all the family got together and were playing and were active in the living room. You could see that somebody was bowling, and you could see the motions they were making for bowling. The Wii U was the opposite of that. It was an inherently isolating system of, I have my screen, I'm going to sit here on the couch, maybe I'm playing with you guys, maybe I'm not, but I'm not part of the same group because it's all asymmetrical. Or in the most likely situation, I'm playing Assassin's Creed alone because somebody else is using the TV. Mm-hmm. It took the idea of the social aspect of the Wii and just kind of inverted it. So I think it wasn't just the branding, but it was part of the fact that they took the branding and they kind of fucked it up. Really kind of messed with what that central idea was. I think they kind of stuck themselves in a bad corner now, because a Switch 2 can't be anything but another Switch. And that's going to, like, how powerful that is and how well they can pull that off in terms of battery and all that is going to depend a lot on what NVIDIA does over the next three, four years.
So here's a crazy question. Is there a chance we never get a Switch 2? And Nintendo just looks at it and is like, this is as good as our games need to look. people like Animal Crossing, where it's at, Smash Brothers, where it's at, Mario Kart, where it's at. Like, the list goes on, and it's just kind of like there's just can continually be new pro versions.
Yeah, but it's like Xbox. It becomes the Switch platform, right? Or the Nintendo platform.
Or the iPad would be a good comparison for that. Like, why really? They're not called like iPad 7 or iPad 8 anymore. They're called like iPad 2020, iPad 2021.
Yeah, the iPad Pro, right?
Yeah, like just release a new, like release a couple of models of different kinds of Switches every couple of years. That might not be a bad plan for them.
And that's what you figure they've been doing already with hardware refinements, right? Where even though they're not making a big deal that the new Switch in this red box gets a better battery, but it does have a better battery. And we know that and we care and we buy those Switches because of that.
Yeah.
You figure if they could just keep doing that. And I think that's where the Pro gets interesting, or whatever you want to call whatever the next version of this iteration of the Switch would be, where, yeah, we still have the Switch Lite that, you know, Gary's daughter can run around and play with and it doesn't dock and nobody cares. And then we also have the regular Switch, and then we or they phase that out and they just move on to having the what the new Switch is, the Switch Pro is, and put that on the box for a little bit, but then fade that out that there is just the Switch.
Yeah, I think what they were doing with the 3DS and making those like slightly more powerful versions of that handheld is kind of gearing up for what we're talking about here. The thing is, I feel like for Nintendo, they're the type of company to want clear messaging in terms of, hey, this is your Switch and it can play all our games. And
they
have a
handheld version of a thing called the Switch, though.
Yeah, but like that thing can still play all the games that are available to the Switch, though. I feel like once we start falling down that rabbit hole of like, okay, yeah, the Switch 2023, you know, is still part of the Switch family, but like it's more powerful, we're gonna get to the point where the OG Switch cannot play certain games that are on the version that comes out 4 or 5 years from now. And at what point does that message start to get muddied?
But that's my thing, is I think you're right, but is there a world where that's not the case, where we've just maxed out on what a Nintendo game needs to be?
Third-party games still exist, though, is I think the difficult thing, where like you still might have companies that do want to put out their Wolfensteins or their Dooms, or I guess I'm just naming Bethesda games because Bethesda put out a lot of games on the Switch, but like, you know, your Skyrims, you're still gonna have companies that want to put out their third-party games on the Switch. I know like that's not, the Switch isn't the third-party platform. It's nowhere near the premier third-party platform. But I feel like you miss out on a lot when you start to cut out that group of games more and more and more as you go on and as you don't step up with the times.
To your point, Blessing, like Doom Eternal was announced as a Switch game at like announcement, and we still haven't seen it. It's supposed to be in 2020 and they still haven't shown it at all. So clearly they're still struggling trying to get those even current gen, a gen that is ending within this month or this year, games onto the Switch. So clearly they do need some overhead if they're going to like try and port those games down.
But is there a possibility that they just give up the goose on this?
On third
and
parties?
It's like, you know, there's been jokes forever where it's just like, you know, Nintendo consoles are, it's for first party games machine, and that's all that they have. But it's like, at what point did this go, that is what we have, and we're selling 20 million copies of Animal Crossing. So, you know, we can sell hardware and we'll continue to sell hardware cheaper than everyone else. And people are going to continue to buy it for their entire families.
It's an interesting argument because I feel, when we say third party, we are thinking of the Bethesdas, the EAs, the 2Ks, right? And I don't think that most, and I know some people do, but most people don't play those kind of games on their Switch. And I think, you know, when we were leading up to the Switch and when people were talking about it, well, it's going to be this and it's going to be that, and we'll have these Nintendo games. Nintendo games will sell the system. The argument counter that was that didn't work for the Wii U. Nobody bought, people weren't buying Wii U's in the droves to play the Nintendo exclusives that were there, which obviously are awesome because they get ported to the Switch and become bestsellers, right? I think what's important about the Switch is it goes so well and hand in hand with indie games to the point that it is this move that Nintendo can put out an amazing game like Animal Crossing, right, and then followed up months later with Paper Mario. And granted, everybody is like, what the fuck is going on, what are you really doing, yada yada yada. There's also a constant stream of nindies coming through there, right, that are cool experiences, and that is where I play most of my indies now, that I save the big consoles for, you know, the AAA experiences or double A's or whatever I'm playing over there. But if I want to try something, if there's something new that I just want to tinker with while I'm watching TV, I get on the Switch.
So, okay, let's go with the premise that 2024 is when we do see a Switch 2, if we end up seeing it. So we're going to get a Switch Pro next year in 2021, and that's going to ride out. There might be iterations here or there, but we're going to 2024. what do the next 3 years look like? 4 years, I guess.
I would guess that's phase two of what we've already seen for Switch, because now we're at the point where we should start getting sequels of games. Like, Breath of the Wild 2 is an obvious example of something that was announced that we should theoretically see sometime next year, maybe, or hopefully. Like, I would guess the 3D Mario team has been working on something as well. Like, all those teams that put out games, they should have new games available. Like, the ARMS team was... The ARMS team is probably not working on ARMS 2, but if they are working on ARMS 2, then that should be ready. Like, I could feasibly see Xenoblade team, even though Xenoblade Definitive Edition came out, that wasn't a full, like, team game. Mm-hmm. So, it's stuff like that. Like, the first year of the Switch is honestly one of the best first years of any console I've seen, period. Because it was month to month to month, every big Nintendo hitter. I think that kind of crippled them a little bit over the next couple of years, but it does mean that all those... The refractory period of that is over, and they can also like in 2021, 2022, we'll probably start seeing the next big things like Animal Crossing. I bet it's not just, oh, we added swimming and that's what we've been working on for the last couple of months. I bet it's more, hey, we have a big expansion we're working on that's coming in, and that's going to go as DLC for the next one. This game's still going to sell another 20 million copies.
Sorry, next Animal Crossing, or
not a next Animal Crossing, like an expansion that makes people still buy that original game.
Got it. So before we go into the new stuff, let's start with the old of Wii U. We have very few games left to port.
Mm-hmm. Where is on... the remix?
Good question. So what games do we expect to see and not to see? So what do we have left? We have NES Remix 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
We have... What? You don't think it's going to happen?
No, I mean, maybe they will, but they always seem like such a weird experiment that, like, even Nintendo seem to just quietly forget about those games.
Yeah, they were fun, though.
They were neat. I wish they would have gotten weirder.
Yeah, that's true. I don't expect to see it either, but I'd like to.
I would like to see it, but I don't think we will. I
mean, we got a Clubhouse game sequel, like, 8-10 years later, so who the fuck knows, honestly.
That's true.
Yeah. So then we got Xenoblade X.
I don't know. Xenoblade Definitive Edition sold really fucking well. So, like, for the history of Xenoblade, they didn't want to bring that game to America in the first place. They eventually did because people complained. It didn't sell great because it was like a GameStop exclusive. And then Xenoblade X didn't sell well because it was on the Wii U. Xenoblade 2 sold surprisingly well. I think last check-in was 1.7 million. By this point, it's probably gotten to 2 million. Xenoblade Definitive Edition sold 1.32 million in like 30 days. So it's clearly on the rise. If we're going to do a low effort thing, it makes sense to just go ahead and port this game over and see what you get from it.
Do you think we see... So Mario 3D World, I think, is a slam dunk we're going to get.
I think it's a slam dunk in the next 6 months, honestly.
What is going on with that? What is going on with the Mario collection? We're going to have all these different Mario throwback games and stuff. Is COVID just screwed all that up?
I assume COVID has screwed it up. There was a bunch of Mario stuff that has a branding, this like Mario 35th anniversary stuff on it. I have to assume there were games to go along with that. And they have not been announced for whatever reason.
When you say that there's stuff with branding, are you referring to like
the Lego sets, Monopoly, stuff like that?
Got it. Yeah, it's weird. I'm shocked we haven't heard it. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up at the end of 2020. We have 3D World, but we don't have the rest of them.
You think we'll get 3D World by the end of 2020?
I do. I feel like we have to get a Nintendo game.
But 3D World, I don't think 3D World is a fall game is the thing. I think that game comes out at the very beginning of the year, if it comes out. Or maybe like toward like June-ish. Like that doesn't strike me as the type of game you release in the fall for Nintendo.
But what if you don't have anything else?
Yeah, I guess. That's just a bummer.
They get very cautious about putting too many Wii U ports together. So, like, Pikmin 3 being so late in the year makes me think that, like, 3D World will be pushed a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I forgot Pikmin 3 was coming out.
Yeah.
It does feel weird. It's coming out
the fall. For us.
To your point, Blessing, like, yes, they put New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe in January, but also to the contrary point, that game sold really fucking well. Like, holy shit. It's 7 million copies. Most games wish they could sell 7 million copies, much less a, like, really late ass port of
a Wii U launch game
that a lot of people just don't like. I think it's amazing, but a lot of people don't like that game, and yet it's sold incredible, like very quietly, done better than like every Metroid game.
Then there's Star Fox
Grand Prix.
No, Star Fox Zero Mission.
Yeah,
wait, zero. No, that's not just zero. Just zero. Yes. Yeah. I hope it's not boring. Let that
Star
one
Fox
die.
Zero Mission would be a game. I
guess like
that.
A skin tight suit.
Yeah.
Give it to the furries. I don't expect to see Star Fox, but I do expect to see the rest of the ones we named, with the exception of maybe NES Remix. Am I missing any other, Imran? That seems like it.
Those are the two big ones.
Oh, Zelda.
Nintendo Land.
Yes. The
Nintendo Zelda's. Land and the Zelda ports. Where are they at?
Those would all be good. And like, why the fuck not at this point? Why not just port all this stuff over? And actually, I mean, like, go ahead.
It's Blast. Nintendo, right? Like, they're experts at drip feeding you everything across the course of a generation. Like, how many times have we like rebought Mario Brothers or reacquired like the classic games? Like, there's no reason why we shouldn't have Earthbound on the Super Nintendo right now, on Super Nintendo Online on the Switch right now. But it's just because they love drip feeding, because they know they could. And now I feel like I'm treating Nintendo as like, oh no, man, like some kind of abusive master or whatever. But if they know they can string us along over the course of an entire generation and have us there, and like we'll be fine with it because there's nothing we can really do about it. Like, I think that's the main reason why we haven't seen the Zelda games be ported again, is because they know, like, I think they could push a button and make that happen, but that button isn't getting pushed until it's time for them.
It's one of the things that actually kind of worries me, speaking of like the Switch 2. What do they do next generation? Because this generation, they got everything under one console brand. So there's no more like, oh, this team is doing a 3DS game. Well, I'd love them to do a console game. So it's all one thing. But they're not going to have like ports that no one played again. Like, there would never be a situation they're not to be like, hey, this on Switch 2, here's Mario Odyssey. It's like, no, 13 million people bought Mario Odyssey. They're not going to buy that again. It's not the same thing as putting in 3D World, which is a fantastic game that nobody played.
Yeah. It's interesting. So, I mean, like, moving into newer stuff then. So, what do you expect to see from the Odyssey team, Imran?
I bet they are working on a new game, like a new 3D Mario. But
it's going to be Odyssey too.
Does it, though?
Yes.
The only time they've ever done like a direct sequel was Galaxy 2. And that was like, we had so many ideas that we had to like make a new game. Here, they put 900 fucking stars into a game. Like, I don't know that they're immediately going to be like, we have so many leftover ideas.
I think they do, though, because it wasn't that one of the rumors you had heard early on that they wanted to start thinking about DLC and what they would do with these different Mario worlds they would put in there. And then, like, wait, we have so many things. Why not keep going? Why not wait and put that all out?
There were some, like, I remember people talking, like, at least guessing there was DLC, because there was, like, an Io Delfino that was the initial art for the game that was taken out by the actual final game. So you're like, oh, yeah, we might be going to Mario Sunshine.
Wasn't that in the final game?
I don't think so. I don't think it was on the world map in the final game. Maybe
I think it was. Wrong me.
I think it was.
Okay. If you're wrong, let me know. That would be great.
I'm looking at the chat. Chat, tell us.
But yeah,
Give us the Luigi Mansion planet. Come on. Come on.
Oh my God. But I think that's the thing, though, is with Mario Odyssey. And sorry to interrupt you, but like Mario Odyssey, I think that game had so much success. Both critically and in terms of like it selling, like it sold really well. I think it'd be easier to return to that formula as opposed to trying to create something again from the ground up, because you already have, like, mechanically it's already there. I'm sure, and they'd probably want to do something new. But if they did reuse the capping mechanic of taking over different enemies, I'm sure folks would be fine with it. Like, I think a Super Mario Odyssey 2 allows you to go and do those crazy things that you weren't necessarily able to do in Odyssey 1, like go to Isle of Delfino, or like do a Luigi's Mansion world, which I don't think they would do, but I think would be super awesome if they did. I think a Mario Odyssey 2 could be Mario Odyssey 1 was a return to form and a celebration of Mario. Mario Odyssey 2 is us going bonkers and really getting creative and taking these established mechanics that, for all intents and purposes, work perfectly. Like, the way that game moves and flows and controls is... Like, that game has some of the most perfect controls I've felt in a video game. I think you don't let that go to waste. I think you go right back to the well and use it again.
So the thing I forgot about until actually right now was that there was a job listing the other day for EAD Tokyo, which is the Mario, like, 3D Mario team, that was asking for a 2D level designer, which that could be, you know, the 2D levels in Mario Odyssey style things.
Yeah, like where you popped on the wall.
Yeah, or it could be, you know, they're maybe they've taken over the 2D design, like Mario games. Maybe that's God. Their next project.
If that team made a new 2D Mario game, I'd lose my fucking mind. Like that sounds like fucking music to my ears. Wow. I hope that's the case. I think it's Mario Odyssey too. And even that, I'd be super happy with. Like, I think that, again, looking at Nintendo's past to predict their future is a futile effort. Like, there's very rarely patterns that actually like pan out. And the moment that there is a pattern, they do something completely out of left field that changes it all up. But trying to look at some patterns here, like, we've never gotten since the NES a Mario game with a sequel on the console of like a core Mario game, right? With the exception of Galaxy and Galaxy 2. Mm-hmm. So getting two 3D Mario games that are like from the ground up with the brand new gimmick, I think is going to be a lot to ask for. Especially like given the years and time frame we're talking about here, where I think that they're going to run with the Cappy stuff longer. There's more to be done there, especially when you can go back to those levels. Those levels were already so big that they can kind of like have a whole bunch of new levels and then also have a couple more fleshed out ones, like the realistic Dragon Kingdom.
Ruined Kingdom? Oh my God, I loved Ruined Kingdom for the 5 minutes it lasted.
But imagine it lasted an hour, you know, like that that'd be really cool. And I think that, you know, that game would sell in droves.
So what would get you more excited at an E3, or maybe not an E3, at a Nintendo Direct at the ending? If we got a Mario Odyssey 2, or if we got a Mario Galaxy 3?
Oh, God.
I think I like the Galaxy games a bit better than Odyssey.
I do too, but I think an Odyssey 2 would actually get me more excited. I think that Galaxy, between 1 and 2, I would rather, I want Galaxy 1 and 2 in HD playable. Like, I want to replay those. I don't know that I need more Galaxy, though. Like, they really kind of, they did it. Galaxy 2 nailed it.
I think Mario Galaxy 3 would set the world on fire. I personally would prefer Odyssey 2 because I like Odyssey better than Galaxy, but I think Galaxy 3 would get the bigger pop than a Mario Odyssey 2.
What about Sunshine 2?
No.
Can you imagine? People would be like, God damn it, Nintendo.
Throwing laptops out of their windows.
Oh, actually, that, like, let's say they make a new Galaxy or a new Odyssey. Then they do that troll trailer. Then they do the Nintendo thing of logo comes in, fades out. They do another start scene. It's Mario wearing Flood. Just for like one level, it's Mario with Flood on.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, that would be so great.
I think that's the type of shit you could do in a Mario Odyssey 2. Like, I think Mario Odyssey 2, if they wanted it to be this, could be a bigger celebration of Mario than Mario Odyssey 1 was. Because like one of the big things that came out in Mario Odyssey 1 was the New Donk City, right? And how that game was a celebration of the original Donkey Kong. And we also got like more Mario 64 references later in the game. But like, imagine if they kept going down that route, and in Mario Odyssey 2, they did do a whole level based on Sunshine, or they did a whole level based on, maybe they could even do a Galaxy level if they wanted to. Like, Mario Odyssey, I feel like, presents endless possibilities in terms of what it could do and what it can be.
Yeah, I mean, all they would have to do is have an Al Delfino level and have like the Water Mario, I forget his name,
Shadow Mario.
Running around, yeah, exactly. Running around, and then you just Cappy him, and then you get Flood or some shit. Like, I'd be into that.
Yeah, like, that's kind of what I'm hitting at Blessing. Like, we're coming at it from different perspectives, but Odyssey represents the fact that you could just do anything. And I feel like once you can do anything, I would love them to hit on a new idea instead. Not that I dislike Odyssey at all. It's just that this team makes so many fucking great ideas. I'd love them to just do a new thing.
To hone in.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Sure.
So, okay, so we expect to see a new 3D Mario, whether it's Odyssey 2 or something like that. We know we're getting Breath of the Wild 2. We know that Metroid Prime 4 is happening. We know that Retro is making it.
Okay, so we skipped past Breath of the Wild 2 a little fast. Here's my question. Do you expect it to just be Breath of the Wild 2? Like, it's the same game, same map with, like, maybe a Dark World mechanic? Or do you expect, like, they have pressure on them now because... Whether you personally think Breath of the Wild 2 is the best game, or Breath of the Wild 1 is the best game ever or not, a lot of people do, and that's a ton of pressure when you're making a sequel.
Yeah, I'm one of those people, and that's why I try not to think too hard about what Breath of the Wild 2 could be or should be or can be, because like I don't know what they can make that would live up to my expectations. I'm gonna say that. Like I have no idea how they could do that. I think the thing with Breath of the Wild 2 though is there are elements that I think we know that they'll have to keep, right? Like I think they got to keep the climbing. They gotta keep the physics, because the physics engine was so powerful, and like so many people, me included, fell in love with that. But then from there, it's like, all right, the open world. You imagine that they'd make somewhat of a different world, but how do they do that if it's a sequel? Does it all take place underground? Do you change the existing world in meaningful ways that, like, well, I don't know. I don't have these answers.
I mean, Zelda's proven to us a million times they can take the same world and make it slightly different, whether it's a dark world or the past or low rule or whatever the fuck. Like, they can do some shit. I very much expect Breath of the Wild sequel to be a Breath of the Wild 2, where it is more of what you love from it, but with traditional dungeons. And I don't think it'd be as many as a normal Zelda game, but I do think that we'll see a lot more than just the four beasts that we saw in Breath of the Wild. I think that there will be actual like Temple of Time and Water Temple and that type of stuff, which is really all I need from the game for it to be super rad. But no, Nintendo, they're going to do something like more Majora's Mask-y and different.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want like every Zelda sequel, the direct sequel has been fucking weird. Like Link Between Worlds, Majora's Mask, they've taken the idea of, hey, you know this world already, let's fuck it up. And that's, I want to see them do that. Like, I forget who I was talking to, but they suggested make it like Link's in one time period, Zelda's in another, and you switch between the two. Like, that would be cool. I want to see them do something strange, knowing that you already know what Breath of the Wild is, so let's subvert that idea.
I think whatever they do, though, has to maintain the same tenets as, I keep wanting to say Mario Odyssey, as Breath of the Wild 1, though. Like, as I'm playing through Shadow Colossus right now, and I'm not going to spoil the conversation that we'll probably end up having on PSLW, one of the things that's coming back to me as far as one of the reasons why I love Shadow Colossus, and it's the same reason why I love Breath of the Wild so much, is those games have such an uninterrupted sense of mystery and discovery that never feels like anything's getting in the way. Like Breath of the Wild, my biggest complaint with it is probably that I did not care about the story in that game or the characters really. Like for the most part, the story is whatever. Like it's a Zelda story, cool. You know, Link's doing a thing. Zelda's also doing a thing, and Ganon's doing a thing. But you know, with Breath of the Wild, I was fine with that because cool. Like I'm very much immersed in this world and I am exploring it and I am doing my own thing. Don't let story get in the way of what I'm doing right now. Breath of the Wild 2, from the one trailer that we gotten from it, it seems like they're setting up some stuff, which seems exciting because I would love, like, I like the idea of this vast, cool, amazing world getting some narrative splashed into it that I actually care about. That said, for Breath of the Wild 2, they still have to find a way to make sure that experience feels uninterrupted and that you're engrossed and that it isn't like, I don't know, like, story that is interrupting you at every moment of trying to figure out what's going on in this dark world, or like you switching me between Zelda and Link. Like I feel like they wouldn't want to overcomplicate what that current Hyrule is.
I think Ghost of Tsushima actually kind of hit the nail on the head of what they might be going towards. Of that game is also very linear. Like we talked to Nate Fox here a couple of weeks ago, and he said Breath of the Wild is one of his inspirations for that game. But there's also serial linear quests. So I think it will be one of those things of you have complete freedom to do whatever you want, but if you want to get on this quest, here's this like number 3 of 5 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like whatever way you want to tackle this quest or whatever order you want to take it on, that's the way we do it. But we still want to have you down some kind of path.
I would like that.
So Metroid Prime 4. We're getting it. I mean, let me start there. Are we getting it?
I would assume so. I would assume that it like completely rebooted development when they said it did, which was January of 2019-ish, I think, was when Takahashi did that video of like, hey, sorry, we thought we were working this game, but we had to give it a retro. So I would not be shocked if we saw it like for the first time sometime next year, but I don't think we'll actually like play it until sometime 2022.
So with that, do we ever see another retro game again that's not this?
I've talked to enough people that have said they were working on a thing. But whether that thing is actually still going to come out, whether it's like sitting there waiting for the finishing touches or maybe like even ready, I have no fucking clue.
Starbucks Grand Prix?
Who knows at this point? That's honestly what I heard it was. I have talked to people who I trust who have like seen videos of that game running. I don't know for sure. I can't, like, personally never seen it. But I think this game is going to be very make or break for Retro. Because they've not put out a game for 2015, so 5 years. And it'll be another at least 2 years before we see another one. So if Metroid Prime 4 comes out and it's bad, I don't think Retro is long for this world. Maybe it becomes an asset creation company at that point.
Man, that is the worst thing I've ever heard.
That's dark. That's a dark thing.
Real dark. Do we ever see a Donkey Kong Country sequel?
I fucking hope so.
And if so, who makes it?
Dude, give it to an indie dev.
I'm down for that.
Like, honestly, I'm struggling to think of who I'd want to develop it. But like in the same way that
Platonic, the ukulele.
Yes. Yes, that is who I'd want to develop it. That's actually a very good poll because Ukulele in the Impossible Lair was actually really great.
It's straight up Tropical Freeze, just with a different concept.
Huh. I jumped to Yacht Club. That's who came to mind for me.
Yacht Club would be great too.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure. Do you want a Donkey Kong Country game that is in the same vein as Returns and Tropical Freeze? Like, do you want another one of those or something that reinvents it?
I do. I would love to see a Donkey Kong, a end to the Returns trilogy that actually returns to the OG, like the King K. Rool and the Kremlins and all that stuff.
I never cared that much about the Kremlins. Like, they've always been like cartoon villains for me, so it's never, those complaints have never like hit me as hard.
It's not so much a complaint as much as it's just, I'd like to see it like go back to that, a bit more of a traditional thing instead of like Tropical Freeze. One of the best 2D platformers, if not best games of all time. But the settings, I think, did wear a little thin over time. And like, I'd like to see a little bit more variation. OG characters come back.
If you played Donkey Kong 64 on the Nintendo 64, you'd understand why the Kremlins are so important to the Donkey Kong world and the Donkey Kong universe. They're very menacing villains.
So now I want to get a little crazy and throw some franchises out there and see if we think we're ever going to see him again. F-Zero.
I could see it. Mario Kart 8 has done so fucking well. Like, it makes sense to diversify with another racing game somewhere along the line.
Punch-Out.
I want to say yes, but I don't think so.
How really? Why do you think not?
Because the only people who would make it these days is Next Level, and Punch-Out didn't sell as well as Luigi's Mansion. So I expect that whatever they're working on next is either going to be like their own dream game or another Luigi's Mansion.
Which, with Luigi's Mansion, do you think we're getting Luigi's Mansion 4? Because I totally do.
If I were Nintendo, I would have them on Luigi's Mansion just because Federation Force just did so badly. But yeah, I think they would be on Luigi's Mansion 4 if I were in charge of the money. That's what I would put them on.
Then, I mean, with Mario Kart, I know we've talked about this a lot, and even on Games Daily we did, but what do we really expect to see from the Mario Kart franchise by 2024?
I think next Switch for sure has one. This one, I think they're probably done with 8. I think, like, they're not going to put a 9 out this generation.
I hate that.
Technically, Mario Kart Tour is 9 because that is the Mario Kart team. That is a brand new game with new tracks, new characters. Like, they added King Bob yesterday or something.
Everyone
like that.
Is saying so many dark things this episode.
No, I don't stand by it.
The game still, what is it, 24 million copies just on the Switch, not even including the 12 million or 8 million on Wii U. Like, it is a ridiculous proposition, but I think I bet there is a thing called Mario Kart 9 sitting somewhere on a computer, but it's not being deployed because Switch sales have not slowed down.
Yeah, I mean, Mario Kart is that game now that I identify with selling a console, and I feel like Mario Kart at this point has to come out toward the beginning of that life cycle. I know, like, Mario Kart, what, 8 or 7 for the 3DS? Was that later in the life cycle? I'm not good at keeping up with these things.
It was fairly early. But
it was fairly early?
It wasn't year one, but like, it was early.
Yeah. I feel like Mario Kart at this point, you just want to put it out early, you know, as a thing to sell the system and for a thing for everybody to flock to and have to play with their friends and like something to be there from the get-go. I don't know what the point would be of putting out a Mario Kart later in the console lifecycle.
I'm telling you guys, I'm standing by this. We're getting another Mario Kart on the Switch because you guys are right. Mario Kart 8 is going to continue to sell, but why not sell another one to the people that already bought Mario
and
Kart
another 8? One?
And they're going to buy another it. One. But I really think the biggest thing for me is we haven't seen a new Mario Kart since 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Like, what can we add to Mario Kart? Like, how do you improve on that?
Mario Kart Tour is the new Mario Kart.
No, it's not. It's not. Sucks. Mario Kart Tour is not a Mario Kart game. It uses the branding. It's an abomination. And it doesn't play like it.
It's by the Mario Kart team. It is what they were working on. So I think probably like internally, I would bet when they do actually do make a new Mario Kart, they forget Tour existed. Like that Sonic 4 bullshit of like, yeah, we're not thinking about the other games. It's this one. This is the real, like, the real sequel you're waiting for. But I do think internally they think Tour is Mario Kart 9.
They can't.
Now
that thing is getting so much new content. It gets new content like every fucking day.
See, the way I think about it is Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is Mario Kart 9. And I'm sure it's like some kind of combination between the two for Nintendo business wise of like, yeah, the Switch has Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. It's the best selling game on the Switch. Like there's no rush to put out a new Mario Kart game because people are satiated. And then Mario Kart Tour is the game that our studio has been working on. Does have new content. Like what is between both those things. Mario Kart, I think, could be chill for a while. And
I don't quite understand the argument of it's the number one best-selling game, so they're good. I see it as like, it's the number one selling game. Put out another one.
Because Nintendo is weird in that they assume, this is the reason they keep their games at $60, is because they will just keep selling forever. If Mario Kart 8 Deluxe sold 22 million copies in the first year and then stopped in the like after that, then they would just immediately make Mario Kart 9. But the fact that it just keeps selling a couple of million every few quarters, then it's like, okay, it seems real dumb to like put Mario Kart 8 and Mario Kart 9 next to each other on a shelf or like on the eShop listing and say, hey, pick and choose. Instead, yeah. They're going to go like, I think the ideal thing to do would have been to put out DLC, but would have been ideal a year or two ago. I still don't know why they haven't done that.
Yeah. But I think part of that might be because it's still a 2013 game. I think whatever Mario Kart 9 is, that is going to be a platform. Like, that is going to get so much DLC. Mario Infinite. I mean, yeah, like, it's going to be Mario Kart 9 Infinite, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine. But it's Nintendo, and so who knows?
Which is actually, like, the thing. That's what I suspected they would do with Mario Kart 8, is, like, they take the logo, turn the 8 to the side, so it's like a Mario Kart Mobius strip. There you go. There's a fucking platform. I don't know why they're not doing that.
Yeah.
More importantly, where's Mario Golf?
That is a good question.
Thank you.
It has to come soon, right? Because tennis sold super well.
That was rumored for this year. Alongside the Paper Mario rumors.
Camelot's not working on anything else, so I'd assume that has to be soon.
Yeah. God, I really wonder. Out of all the video game secrets of the last year, Nintendo's the thing I want to know the most. Where it's like, what was the plan for 2020?
What are you hiding?
Because when we look at PlayStation and Microsoft, and sure, we're still seeing the repercussions on the Microsoft side, and like Halo getting delayed and all that is obviously signs of plans going awry. Yeah. But I feel like you can kind of look at those guys, and at least now things might have been pushed back a bit, but we're now seeing what the year could have looked like, would have looked like, whatever. With Nintendo, it's like there's no way this was the plan.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah. The more and more we've been talking, more and more, I'm like, yeah, y'all really got nothing on the docket. Like compared to 2017 and 2018, where it was like, oh yeah, here's Zelda, here's Snipperclips, here's ARMS, here's Splatoon 2, here's Mario Odyssey, like here's Luigi's last year was Luigi's Mansion and Astral Chain and Fire Emblem and Pokemon. And it's like
Link's Awakening.
Like what's happening here? Like what's going on to where the Switch feels like it's empty, even though the last 3 years has been so full of life and vibrance.
My understanding is COVID hit them hard, but also it wasn't going to be a great year to begin with. Mm-hmm. And like, I think my suspicion is at this point, Bravely Default is going to be delayed because I'm pretty sure that game, like I played that demo. That demo was not good. I feel like they were really hoping Bayonetta would hit this year, but it's obviously not going to at this point. There's a lot of things that I think would have been great for, like if everything worked out and coalesced in a nice way, And I think part of it is that Nintendo hates the first half of the year. They fucking hate it. They hate releasing games from January to June. And they really maybe release like one or two and like ride that for the rest of the year. So like Animal Crossing was like fortuitous for them this time around. But they usually don't have a year-round schedule. They have a let's put out a couple of games in the first half and then let's like fucking blitz the second half. And this year they got killed because the second half, everything got delayed. Like I would bet Pokemon Snap was probably this year at one point, and now it's not.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's our thoughts on the future of the Nintendo Switch. Stay tuned if you're a patreon.com/kindoffunnygames supporter for the Patreon post show, which is another episode of Bless Who.
That is
amazing game show that I cannot wait to play. Until then.
Who won last week?
Greg Miller did.
That's a good question. Say,
I don't like we hide in this stuff and that my stunning record here in the background.
Whatever. Love you guys. Bye.
Oh, whatever me.